Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Paddock Notes Show from the final day, Sunday, at the Grand Prix of Portugal, the Algarve International Circuit. As usual, I'm Adam Wheeler, and I'm joined by my venerable colleague, Mr. Neil Morrison. Neil, you've just been smoking on your keyboard, or you've been smoking your keyboard, not literally, but I guess in terms of bashing it out.
Rolling it up, putting it in, yeah, paper.
Feeling quite chilled out now, are we?
More chilled out than normal, yeah. Smoke's still coming off my fingers after I was rushing to get a deadline met, which I just did. So, what a day, Ad, what a day.
In the spirit of the race, I think we should do 20 minutes of pretty mundane chat and then the last 2 minutes ramp things up and make it quite exciting. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, although I'm sure our listeners would argue that it's always pretty mundane chat. But we'll try our best to avoid that because, yeah, I agree with you. For, I think, about 18, 19 laps, it seemed like this was... It had the potential to explode into something. We had the top three were more or less together, but no one was really close enough to make an overtake. And then we had three guys behind them, and Pedro Acosta was providing some of the excitement like we saw in Qatar. And then suddenly things started happening. Acosta, firstly, was the spark which started it all. And then huge incidents with Bagnaia and Marquez clashing, and Maverick obviously crashed out of second place in the final lap as well.
Three big things and three questions. The big thing, of course, Jorge Martin's first win of the season, taken in dominant fashion, pretty much from lights to flag. Second thing, Enea Bastianini, really burying the ghost from 2023 here, taking second place. And then third, of course, Pedro Acosta, like you said, that, you know, a podium finish in his second Grand Prix. Martin was quick to remind us in the press conference that it's not the first time Acosta's done it, and he almost wanted to dampen some of the excitement by saying that he achieved exactly the same feat in his debut season, which I'd forgotten, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. But there were slightly different circumstances that came at in bizarre circumstances. 2021, the second race was the same track as the first race, which came just after a pre-season test in Qatar as well. Whereas this was the first time Acosta had ever been here on a MotoGP bike. All intents and purposes, lost the first session because the track was in such bad condition on Friday morning. fortune played a part with Maverick's crash at the end. But I think for the second race weekend in succession, we're coming away with the impression that Acosta has done something quite remarkable.
So the questions, first of all, let's go to Maverick Viñales. We perhaps weren't expecting him to be as strong for the full distance, which maybe we're doing a little bit of a disservice to him, Neil. I mean, we've questioned his mental consistency or stability, but Viñales was excellent today, considering quite early in the race he had a problem with his gearbox. He said it was kind of jumping out of fifth and sixth. Towards the end of the race it got considerably worse, and he said he was jabbing like the foot peg five or six times to actually try and get the thing into gear. And then essentially his crash was caused by that, wasn't it? Because he said he came out of the last corner, I think he hit second or something, that the bike pretty much locked up. That's why he stuck his leg out almost to warn Bastianini, you know, that I'm in trouble here. And then once he got into the first corner, that was it.
Yeah.
Well, he was actually in second when he went into the corner.
Yeah, I think he had been having issues engaging sixth gear from fifth all race long. Said it was costing him about 0.2 seconds along the main straight. Even like that, he was able to roughly hang in there with Jorge Martin. Still had the impression that he could catch Martin on the final lap, but then as he crossed the line, I think for the penultimate time, he couldn't really engage fifth, stuck his leg out to warn Bastianini behind, and then was really struggling. I think kicked the lever down to about second, and then I think as he kind of touched the gas in second gear, the thing just came around and spat him off. So yeah, really, really unfortunate. An issue, you have to say, a technical issue, which has really robbed Aprilia of a fantastic result. Maverick's best weekend in Aprilia colours, I think, for sure. 100%, because it wasn't just qualifying that he nailed. He was brilliant in the sprint. Won that, obviously. And, yeah, kept Martinov honest in really quite trying circumstances when there was a kind of technical issue which was holding him back. So you mentioned it. Maverick isn't always the most stable, consistent, reliable of characters, but he was brilliant here. And like I said yesterday, it makes you wonder a little bit just why he can't produce these performances more often. But yeah, cruel really that that Fiat intervened like that. And yeah, he was on his backside by the end.
Well, that satisfies the first question in what actually happened to him. I mean, Qatar was a very maverick kind of weekend where there was flashes of brilliance, but ultimately he didn't deliver. There are signs now that on the 24 RSGP he could be a factor, and then we're left wondering once again what will happen when we get to the circuit of the Americas. But Vinales had a pretty gnarly high side. He came to the media debrief, said he was a bit sore, but otherwise okay. Of course, he's been ill through the weekend as well, so just a pretty traumatic Grand Prix overall for the Catalan. But yeah, moving on to question number two. Before that, guys, of course, just a reminder that we're supported fantastically by Renthor.com. Loads of accessories for your street bike. Go and look there, as well as Fly Racing. Lots of off-road gear and a really cool helmet in the Formula S. And KTM.com. Fantastic road bikes, naked bikes, whatever you want. Later on in the podcast, we've got some reaction from Paul Chirathan, Pedro Acosta's crew chief, and we also spoke to Andres Madrid, Brad Binder's crew chief. And I think Brad had a pretty difficult weekend. Not only was the track tricky for the KTM nil, but also it just shows sometimes the risk in trying some new stuff when it doesn't quite go to plan. And Andres will let us know later in the interview, you'll be able to hear exactly what happened for the South African this weekend. Moving on to the second question, Bagnaia and Marquez, this racing incident, what was your take on it? Who do you think was to blame? And who was more convincing in their explanation? I guess there's three questions, not one.
Who was to blame?
What was your take on it?
My take on it was that it was a racing incident.
Sit on that fence.
Okay, it was Pecco's fault and he should be banned from racing. I think it was a racing incident. It was kind of like an exact copy of what Marquez did to Martin on the final lap of the sprint on Saturday. Real late kind of lunge into turn five, but this time he couldn't quite get it stopped in time. There was a gap there, but Bagnaia, knowing that Marquez was going to be cutting it tight and coming back across him, decided to go through anyway. And it was interesting because a similar situation opened up when Acosta passed him down at turn three, and then he very clearly sort of pulled out of trying to reverse it back for fear of Acosta hitting him. But he wasn't willing to do that with Marquez. And Mark said afterwards that Pecco was really struggling. I mean, Pecco was quite surprising, actually, how subdued he was all race long. I had him down for the win today, thinking that he would have kind of righted the wrongs of Saturday when he was leading and then obviously made a mistake, ran off track. But he just didn't look convincing at all. And he was there for the taking in the closing laps. At the same time, I don't think we can criticize him too heavily, because there was a gap there. It was very optimistic. I think Mark said it was a racing incident, but it was absolutely on the limit of being a racing incident. And I think that was something that I would go along with. But it did show that Bagnaia really has it in his head that he can't let Mark get the better of him in this early part of the season, that he has to give it absolutely everything to keep the number 93 behind him. Because if Mark has his measure after the second race of the year, then it doesn't really bode well when we're going to a decent run of tracks for Marquez, let's face it. So I thought racing incident, if I did have to point the blame at someone, it was Bagnaia. But you can't really,
he's on the inside.
On the inside, yeah. You can't criticize him for going for a space, but I think in retrospect, it's maybe a bit optimistic. In his defense, he is hanging off the inside of the bike and he can't really see that much of Marquez from the other side. But knowing that Mark is, with Mark that he's probably going to cut back, I think, maybe slightly naive and slightly optimistic.
You got to love all the kind of analysis you can throw at this thing, especially for the mental repercussions. You could even posit that it's a little bit of a vulnerability or a weakness for Pecco, because we've seen this before. I mean, if we think of Motegi, or last year there was a bit of a running with Maverick at Le Mans. In traffic, I mean, Bagnaia is such a cool customer, but, you know, there are these heated moments where maybe he just loses his thought process for a moment. Like you say, that, you know, when he saw it was 93, Maybe there was just some kind of psychosis there going on.
Yeah, and Mark was interesting. I mean, this was very much a case of the pot calling the kettle black. But Mark was saying, you know, you can be aggressive at the start of the race. You can be aggressive at the end of the race if you're fighting for the victory. But the difference between fourth and fifth was 2 points. And Mark didn't feel really that necessary to go all in just to get a fourth place instead of a fifth place. I would probably posit that Mark would have done exactly the same thing had the shoe been on the other foot and Pecco had come to his factory, in inverted commas, and was on the cusp of beating him in his second race on the bike. But I think Marquez was more convincing. He was quite veiled. He wasn't openly slagging Bagnaia off, but reading through his comments again after listening to them, I realized that, yeah, there was quite a few little digs in there that he was basically saying, like, yeah, you know, it wasn't clever. And he's learned his lesson now in a kind of patronizing way. So, yeah, I think he'll be pretty revved up, and this will be something that he'll remember going forward.
He was pissed off, you know, with the zero on the scorecard. You know, he said it was the same thing last year. You know, early on, of course, when he fell in Qatar, and then, you know, that was a DNF, and that was something he wanted to avoid. And here we are, second race of the season, and that kind of thing is already popping up. So you can understand the frustration to a degree. But it's just interesting when these two come together. I think we both expected better, right? I mean, Bagnaia wasn't too detailed on his explanation for the lack of competitiveness, just said he was suffering grip and losing up to 0.2 a lap in certain sections. And Mark himself was also not quite the attacking force that we saw during the sprint.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was weird. And I think it shows that with this year's Ducati, the value of getting out to the front is absolutely, you know, it's basically the be-all and end-all, because yesterday Jorge Martin was talking about having difficulty with the front tire pressure, having difficulty with rear tire temperature and rear chatter. Whenever he was following other guys, he couldn't be competitive despite feeling fast in the sprint race. But Martin got the jump today, led from the front, had a clear track in front of him, and said he didn't really have any of those issues through the race. So whereas Bagnaia, obviously trapped a bit back in the pack, just wasn't able to kind of get that comfortable feeling. And he said that he had a bit of the chatter today. So so it seems like it's a little bit of an issue for the new Ducatis whenever they're in the pack, whenever they're behind other riders. I was surprised as well, especially with Marquez, because I thought on the first lap he rose from 8th to 5th, I think, and was perfectly placed, really. You know, was fighting with Pecco on the first lap, and I thought he's perfectly placed to fight, but just never quite had that optimum speed to get with the front three.
A random kind of tangent, Neil. What was your sort of moment of the day or of the Grand Prix?
Well, I would have to say that there were many, but I'll just do one just for you, Ad, because I know the clock is ticking. It was Bagnaia's look across the Marquez in the gravel trap after they had crashed. Mark ran to his bike to try and pick it up, and Pecco obviously knew that his race was run. There was no chance of rejoining, and he just looked across in this kind of withering way, which I thought was quite wonderful. And let's be honest, this is what we kind of want in the championship. I mean, it hasn't taken Mark long to already shake up or ruffle the feathers of Ducati's leading guy. And hopefully this can be a fabulous battle coming forward, because we're both expecting these guys to be fighting for the championship this year.
Well, that's quite unlike you to have a fondness for a look of utter disgust.
I have to put up with yours all weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was nice seeing another one.
Well, yeah, you didn't even see it. It was underneath a tinted visor. But for me, my moment, I think, was the time when Acosta passed Marquez, I think for like the third time in two Grand Prix. And the TV director cut directly to the KTM pit box, where we saw Pit Beirer flanked by Hubert Tronchenpoltz, an executive member of the board at the Pirro Mobility Group, and then Mr. Stefan Pirro himself. And their reaction was pretty priceless. I think, you know, if there was any slither of a doubt about KTM's sort of future in road racing program and what they're doing, you know, any kind of analysis on their whole overall strategy, then today just like revved up the excitement levels. And I'd have been very surprised if Stefan Pirro left here thinking, you know, well, let's think again about our rider lineup or whatever we have to do to get Pedro Acosta to sign a contract to stay in either red or orange.
Yeah. I mean, we know when those guys get together, KTM's top brass, something always comes of it. It's not like they just sit around and talk about you know, how their dog's doing, or you know, how the family's getting on, whether their sons are happy at university. It's about brass tacks, really, and usually something kind of interesting emerges from it. So I'll be, I agree with the idea. Tonight they'll be thinking, how do we tie this guy down to be our man for the next 4 or 5 years? Because I thought, yeah, Acosta today was amazing. And I've said that pretty much every day that he's been on a MotoGP bike, but I think today even superseded what we've seen before, because it was an incredible performance. I think we're going to be talking about this day for a long, long time. And I didn't expect him to be on the podium in his second race, the third youngest rider to finish on the MotoGP podium in history. But yeah, the way that he wasn't just passing the likes of Miller, Binder, Mark, and Bagnaia, he was making them look so ordinary. He was passing them, and then he was just effortlessly breaking clear of them. It was a remarkable performance.
Well, hold on a second there. It will come to my last question in a moment, but first we've got that audio clip from Paul Chawrathan, Pedro's crew chief, and here is what he had to say. Paul, we spoke last time in Qatar, and to be honest, I didn't think we'd be speaking this quickly again on the podcast, but it's fantastic to be able to get some reaction from you. What a, I don't know, a pocket wonder you've got. It's amazing to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like we what we said last time. He keeps amazing me, you know. I just don't know where the limit is, and what he can come up with and do, and how he improves himself every day is unbelievable. You know, the racecraft, the whole thing, understanding these bikes, understanding the tyres, and really super happy for him. Super happy for the team, because it's not been easy there, but it shows that also. It's not only just about a team sometimes, you know. So there's many other things that's going on, and the kid's just, really wonderful, fantastic.
Paul, Pedro was talking about some changes you guys made in the warm-up to help him attack on the first laps. Is there any kind of details you can give us about that? Anything interesting?
No, I mean, it's little stuff, you know, but it was only just he's understanding the bike better, understanding what he needs better. So then it's just, you know, thinking, okay, how can we do that to get that sort of feeling that he needs? And it was just little stuff. It was not, didn't turn the bike upside down by any means, but it was just, I guess it's more him understanding what he needs more, you know, and he doesn't like to just ask for stuff out of the blue. So he always wants to understand why and how he needs it. And I think it's just us getting more understanding of each other and what we can change and what we can affect and things like that, you know. So we tickled something, and it gave him that much confidence, but trust me, the tickle didn't do that, it was the rider.
It shows how much we journalists say, because we thought that Pedro would struggle a little bit more on this circuit, which was, you know, he didn't have so much riding time, well, none, yep, compared to Qatar, this one and also Cotter, but I mean, he just knocked it out of the park, really.
You know, it is that, mate. It's I don't know, it's like I say, how we can improve overnight, all the little elements that a rider can fix and not us, you know, and taking in the information, understanding the information, and then making it happen. This is that champion factor that he has that I'm just amazed with, you know. And it's not us fixing it, it's him. This is clear.
Lastly, Paul, does it show something of the trust that the factory, you know, and the team put in Pedro, that, you know, he's using kind of the latest sort of updates that's popping up on Brad's bike? Yeah. How is it kind of working in that system for you guys, having to, you know, like you say, change the bike or, you know, introduce new stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you also, when you're dealing with a rookie, that is what we should call him, I guess, but he's not. But when you're dealing with that, it complicates things, you know, because he doesn't know the track. He doesn't know this bike on the track. He doesn't have an electronic setting. You got FP1, and you got to go in the first run of PR to have any chance of testing anything. After that, it's all about just going as fast as you can. So to learn all that stuff and to get very good comments back and understand how the bike should be set up with all these different changes, it's amazing, you know. And that's the part that extra he has that lets you do it, because otherwise you would not put a rider through that, you know. It wouldn't be worth it.
Well, I hope we can bother you again and take more of your time in the United States to see what happens.
No worries, mate. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Lastly, Neil, as I kind of mentioned to Paul there, should we be shocked or surprised? I think we perhaps showed some of our lack of knowledge or perhaps insight during the podcast last week when we said that the Algarve International Circuit would be a much more difficult prospect for Acosta, because
you said that.
Didn't I? Was it just me?
Well, it wasn't just you. But
you were nodding along in agreement.
I think I might have countered and said, well, Pedro's record in Moto 2 and Moto 3 here was pretty exceptional, so
analyze the video, show us the data.
Well,
show the data, there you go.
We're on a tight deadline here, so I don't know if I have the time, but if you want me to do so for our show on Wednesday, Ed, I can definitely go through the YouTube clip and get that recording for you.
Well, listen, last question. Yeah, you know, Is it Acosta here? Is that it? Yes. I mean, Marc Marquez was saying in his debrief that he said pre-season that Acosta's going to get on the podium, he's going to get wins. And you think, well, there's a man who knows what it takes to ride a MotoGP machine. I mean, he was saying he loved Acosta's raw rookie energy. You know, he was kind of hitting curbs, taking lines and big sweeping arcs that didn't really have any regard for tire life or, you know, for the quality of the opponent around him. He was just going for it. And I love the fact that Marquez was smiling as he was saying that. I mean, it actually moved another journalist to say to him, you know, did that kind of form or that style of riding remind you of yourself? So it was a fantastic display. Yes, you can say he lucked into the podium finish because of what happened to Maverick. But he was already up to the top five, fourth. He was running fourth. I mean, that would have equaled sort of Gas's best Grand Prix result. And for all the description you just laid on previously, yeah, I think we should get more and more excited about this kid.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. He was back in eighth. The way that he came through to fourth was brilliant. The sort of the shapes that he was making on the bike, the way he was hanging off it, the way he was loading the front, going in with so much confidence into turns 10 and 11, 7 and 8, and then 10 and 11 with angle. Like, there were so many occasions where I thought this guy is about to crash. It was also interesting watching the change of line between Friday through the last double right and today. Like, it was so different how he was attacking that final corner, which showed that it really didn't take much time for him to understand what he needed to do differently and then to apply and do it differently. And
he livened things up, didn't he? Because it was largely a procession then. It was quite static. And then, you know, if it wasn't for Acosta's sort of boisterous antics, then it would have been a bit of a snoozer.
Yeah. It was just like Qatar in that sense. You know, he was the guy bringing it to life until the sort of late drama for Mark and Pecco and Maverick. But yeah, there's so many things to say about him. And I think even Jack Miller seemed like just kind of in awe of what he was able to do. Mark said that it's kind of the thing that happens whenever you don't have any experience, you go blindly in just trusting yourself. He said it's different with him because he's always trying to correct himself and go against his natural instinct, whereas Pedro's just able to flow, do what he thinks is right, and at the moment it's working wonderfully.
Jack was pretty good value when he was talking about, you know, the riding style. He says if he thinks about how he was riding a MotoGP bike back in 2016 to what it's like now, of course you evolve. Maybe that raw energy that you bring erodes slightly. I think he made some sort of gag like, I have to do some more Pilates or something to get more flexible. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody described Acosta as not really being on top of the bike, but more off it, off to the side of it. I mean, he was dragging a lot of himself along the pavement. It might have even been Jack from all the riders we spoke to. Are you all right there, mate? You look like you're suffering.
Something caught my throat.
Listeners, Neil has been moved to such emotion by Pedro's display. I think we might have a number one fan. I think Digi is going to be suffering some less affection now.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. And I kind of briefly caught up with Paul Trevathan as well after the race, and he was just saying, I don't know what the limit is for this guy. Like, it's, I spoke to Hervé Poncharal on Thursday. We're going to run that in the pod in the next couple of weeks. He said, I think a podium is possible this year being later in the season and second round, and he's already done it. If he can qualify better and nail the first couple of laps where he seems to just be a little bit weaker compared to his competitors, then he can fight for victories. I really do think so. So it's remarkable performance. And I spoke to KTM's photographer, Polarity Photo, Rob Gray, afterwards, and he said, I think we saw something really special that we'll always remember today, and I'm inclined to agree.
Yeah, Polarity Photo, the media center's own Pedro Acosta, though somewhat older, you could say. Ducati with Jorge Martin won 11 Grand Prix in a row. We'll talk a bit more about George Martin's performance on the podcast this week. But let's not ignore the fact that three KTM RC16s filled the top five, with Brad Binder in fourth and also Jack Miller coming home in fifth. So a pretty decent turnaround after what was initially a tricky weekend for the KTM boys. And on that note, we caught up with Andrés Madrid to sort of ask the situation with Brad. And he crashed out of the sprint on Saturday, of course, and then made up for it with a decent points haul today, which keeps him second in the World Championship. But here's our talk with Andrés. Andrés, thanks very much for talking to us. I know it's a busy time. You guys have got to get things packed up and move on to Austin. And, well, I mean, the boxes are being taken down around us here. Can you just, like, sum up Brad's weekend? Because I imagine after yesterday, he needed to rediscover a bit of confidence in the main race for today.
Yeah, I think before we arrived to Portimao, I said to Brad that this track has not historically been one of our strongest from the calendar, for sure. This and this place in Austin, I remember, were not especially good in the past. Not terrible, but this was like a challenge. So the idea before coming here is to make a damage limitation, if we can, of course, to attack. We start really not bad. We were third on the first session. We were fifth on the practice. He also said I had something in the pocket, which normally this is good for qualifying for the ultimate lap time on Saturday. But from Saturday morning on, Bradley started to struggle to feel the bike as his motorcycle. For some reason, he said, I don't feel comfortable. Sometimes it's easy to look to the wrong direction, because when the track conditions changes, it's very easy that we get wrong conclusions. So we usually don't like to overreact, and we introduce some small updates on the bike this weekend, as many people could see on the aero side. And the first impression was not bad, but as the race weekend was going on, we probably found some negatives, or it's always a trade-off, no? There were for sure some benefits, but we got some comments that we usually never hear, no? So another thing is that because of the conditions, we dedicate more time using compounds, tire compounds that we usually don't with the front. And this probably led us to went to some direction on the setup, especially with these new updates, that together with some probably misunderstanding from Brad in terms of riding style, make some combo that when we went to race mode and we put the race tires, we had some unexpected behaviors on the motorcycle.
So overall, Andres, it was quite a complicated weekend. I mean, why is Portimao or the Algarve International Circuit a difficult circuit for KTM, for Brad? I mean, what is it about the nature of this place that makes it tricky?
Well, I think this track is super particular. You can compare this place with any other. You have not only corners left and right, you have also corners up and down. And it's very easy that you try to, if you rush it, the lap time is not coming. Like, for example, in the first practice, Brad started not so well, let's put it in this side. Okay, there were other problems with the bike that he was suffering. But there was a moment that he said, okay, I need to calm down, hit my marks, and try to be precise. And then all of a sudden, the lap time was coming. The reason, well, I think it's a track where you really need to understand what are you doing. And as I said, if you get nervous and you want to push too much, it's very easy to make mistakes, no? Also, Brad's nature. He has certain characteristics from his riding style that probably are not suited to this track, as we all know. No. Nevertheless, we have seen in the past Brad being fast and doing some nice comebacks in this track. So I really think it's not just a question of himself. I also think that some of the changes that we did this weekend from the bike, together with this format that we have, where you need to set a lap time, you need to qualify, we could not have much time enough to get a proper understanding of what we need to do to set the bike up for these new components. So I think it's I'm pretty sure that if Brad would have got the confidence, for sure the performance would have been a lot different.
Andres, that's a fourth place to go with the second from Qatar. Brad's still quite high in the championship. What's the feeling amongst you and the guys as well as Brad after this GP? Is it a little bit of relief, or is there, you know, some satisfaction there?
Well, I probably no. I talk in the name of the team because I look the faces of the guys. I think we are not satisfied. The reality is that the pace, we were missing something, and there was another KTM in our group, which was easily 3-4 tenths faster than us per lap. So if that is the reference, it means that we need to improve. So there's no excuse. We need to continue working, understand how to get the maximum out of our package. And luckily, we have also some data to compare and to learn to go more to the front. No, I think in any case, this is always better because it means it's possible, it's doable. So every time you have like a carrot in front, you try to chase and you try to get it. So we are really happy for Pedro's result, but of course we cannot be satisfied with our job because we got a P4 in this track and it was a big damage limitation. But the target is that we need to find the speed and we need to do by our own because we cannot wait that every weekend this is going to happen.
Lastly, the knowledge from Qatar and then what you experienced this weekend, what does that mean for Qatar? Because it's another Qatar for, you know, next Grand Prix in Texas. It's another tricky track, you know, complicated to stitch it together.
Yes, it is. As I said, it's a track where in the past we also struggled to find the speed there with in all the classes. I remember in Moto3 we had a very difficult weekend. Although we made the podium, but we made the podium because one rider in front crashed at the end. In Moto2 we had some up and downs, and then in MotoGP, we were close, but never fast enough to be in the top. I still believe that if you want to win a championship, you need to be there in every track. So that's the target. We don't want to put absolutely any excuse. And our goal is to try to jump to the podium every weekend. I still believe that our bike is really working not bad. In this track, once again, Pedro proved it. So I think it's more a question of understanding what we did this weekend with the new updates and try to collect data. Collect data and check what we need to do for next weekend or for Qatar. But really, I think we are not far. I think just making a couple of modifications, we can make the next step. I'm pretty sure.
Andres, thanks ever so much for your time. Buen viaje a Estados Unidos. We'll see you next time.
No worries. Thank you. I appreciate.
Okay, Neil, we're almost done here at the Algarve International Circuit, round two in the books of 21 in total. Moto2, Moto3, very quickly, anything that caught the eye, anything that was pretty exciting? Daniel Holgado for the second year in a row taking victory in Moto3 and getting one back on David Alonso.
Yeah, it was a good race in Moto3. Danny Holgado sort of righted his wrongs from Qatar with a really strong final lap where he was able to defend the lap in its entirety from Jose Antonio Rueda. Good little battle there. I think those two guys are going to be fighting for the championship right the way through. I think David Alonso didn't quite find it as comfortable leading up at the front as he does sitting in the pack and being the hunter. Some food for thought, I think, for the Colombian. And in Moto2, we have to say...
He did it.
He did it, finally. Yeah. 68 races, I think it took. Sorry, this was his
68?
This is his 69th, yeah. 15 runner-up spots in the past, and Aaron Canet can finally call himself a Moto2 race winner. I know he ditched the bow tie a long time ago, but the bow tie is now officially gone. And Yeah, you have to say well-deserved. Pupi got a little bit fortuitous. Alonso Lopez crashed out of the lead. Fermín Aldeguer jumped to start, got two long lap penalties, dropped back to 13th, and Aldeguer's recovery from 13th was amazing. Like, it was Marquez-esque in Moto2. He climbed up right into the podium battle. Could have got, I think, a second maybe or a third, but clearly had like ruined his tires in that comeback.
Talk about a display of ability.
Yeah, it was a remarkable ride from Aldeguer, but still, Canet was faultless in the final couple of laps, and Joe Robertson second, which I thought was great. You know, going into his home race, Joe really does seem transformed this year now that he's back with American Racing. Loves the Pirelli tires, loves working with John Hopkins once again, and we're starting to see the best of the American.
The Red Bull Grand Prix of the Americas is round three, but we'll be back during the week with the usual Paddock Pass podcast. Neil, always a pleasure to talk to you. I think it's time we get this edited online and get and have a glass of wine or a beer somewhere. I think it's well earned.